But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shordell, and I'm here with co-host and producer Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stuart.
Good morning, Tom. So we are doing this by phone today. As we sometimes allude to on the air, we pre-record the show for airing on Sundays, and we are recording today on Friday amongst the snowstorm.
Yeah, I got up this morning. I was a little surprised. I had heard it was gonna snow, but I'm expecting an inch or two because, you know, they always predict the end of the world, and somehow it never happens. But anyway, I woke up, I looked out the window and went, whoa, look at this. You know, it must have been 7-8 inches out there, I would think. It took me half an hour to get my car cleaned off.
Wow. I'm in Farmingdale, so I actually had it pretty good for some reason. And I don't understand, because I had two cars, one in front of each other on the driveway, and the one that was in front had virtually no snow, I guess because of wind, and the other was, like, pretty piled on, but...
Well, it's funny, you know, in winemaking, they refer to microclimates, you know, which are these little climate differences between areas in the same general area, you know. And this is probably, evidence of that because, you know, you can get 8 inches, 10 inches on a North Fork, and the South Fork gets 3, and, you know, Great Neck gets 5, and, you know, Farmingdale gets none. It's really pretty cool the way it all works out.
It's all cool till somebody gets hurt. But meanwhile, I don't know if I should really be talking to you because last week I was down in Florida. I needed help with a recommendation on a restaurant, and I could not get Tom Shordell on the phone.
What was the problem?
Well, I was in... West Palm Gardens by the PGA National. And that's where Tom Shordell usually takes his vacations when he's golfing with his friend.
Yes, that's my turf.
Yes, so I was eating at the River House, and I didn't know if that was the restaurant that you talk about.
No, it's not.
Okay.
I'm not sure where the River House is. I haven't been there. I think I've heard of it, though. It sounds vaguely familiar to me.
It's right on the main drive as you drive through town. It was very nice, interesting array of items on the menu. You could obviously come by car, but there were also some boats and yachts coming up to the dock. But it was a pretty eclectic menu, anything from a home-cooked meatloaf to Dover sole.
You know, the golf pro that I work with over at the club has mentioned that place. I think he goes there. And I think I'm going to meet up with him. I'm going down there March 1st. And I think he's coming back here the 2nd. So I'm going to try and hook up a round of golf with him on the first day that I get there. And he swore he was going to take me there. And I believe that's the place he said.
Yeah, really, really nice. We had some oysters that were spectacular. Just a fine array of items. I think I also had some prime rib, and you'd be proud of me because you've alluded to on the show that I usually like my meat a little well done.
Yeah.
But the prime rib we shared, and one of the participants wanted it rare or medium rare, and it came out very, very pink, and I still enjoyed it.
Did you eat around the edges, or did you?
No, I actually dove right in.
Yeah,
it was you know, served with an au jus gravy and what would you call it? An au jus?
Au jus?
Yeah, it was just a jus.
Yeah, it's like a natural juice.
Yeah, so that was really good. And then the Dover sole was pretty cool. It was served with capers and a brown butter sauce.
Yeah, that's kind of a standard with that, you know, with parsley or whatever.
But it was very, very good.
Yeah, I mean, Dover sole is nice. It just, to me, it's kind of silly to go all the way to France to get sole when you have it right out the backyard here in the Great South Bay. You know, it's like, I don't think Dover sole is any better than Fluke.
You're right, but the company that I had, I have to play up to sometimes, and that's something that is a go-to for them.
Yeah, it's kind of it's a holdover from like the 50s. You know, I mean, that's when Dover sole was huge. And, you know, we weren't doing the local thing so much. And, you know, in fact, it's funny we should just get on the subject, but I just had a Facebook post from somebody who mentioned Ross's North Fork restaurant, John Ross. Remember John? He's a friend of the show.
Mm-hmm.
He was on a few years ago. And John was, he was probably the first guy in America that was really doing farm-to-table cooking. And he was a lone voice in the wilderness out in the middle of nowhere. The North Fork, you know, in 1971, 2, 3, was, you know, no man's land out there. And he opened this restaurant called Ross's North Fork, and he basically used just what was around him. The farmers, he was doing the wines before they were really popular, you know, and some of them weren't very good initially. But he was the lone voice in the wilderness talking about localist, that and the other thing. And I reminded, you know, I had to throw my 2 cents in there, of course, and I can't keep my mouth shut, right? So that's why I have a radio show. But anyway, I had to, you know, just let everybody know that it was John that really started that whole farm-to-table movement. Most of the, most of the food trends start in California, and they work their way back this way, and they get to Manhattan, and they go to the Hamptons, and then eventually they come to Nassau and Suffolk, you know. But we were the first. John was the first. First guy I ever heard talking about farm-to-table cooking and local, and that was in probably middle to late 70s. So yeah, he was ground. He was patient zero, I think, you know.
Well, now you're making me feel bad because, again, I told you I had to accommodate one of the guests, and I went to something that I knew was a go-to for them, but I really should have tried some local fish.
Yeah, I mean, would you rather have something that was caught, you know, this morning or yesterday or something that was caught last week and packed in ice and frozen and flown over here and then repacked in ice and then unfrozen and then served to you? I
mean, Tom, as long as my fish doesn't taste fishy, I'm good.
Yeah, my cow never tastes cowy, you know. It's funny that way.
But it's funny. Again, these people are very white bread, and when we went through that we were sharing and what we were getting, again, I had to play up. But the other thing that they always order, and to me, I'm done with it. It's just too common, is, fried calamari.
Oh, my God. Italian rubber bands.
It has to be every time, you know. There's so many nice things on the menu, and that's what they want. We actually, they had some burnt Brussels sprouts, which were really, really, really good. It's funny because I associate Brussels sprouts as fall, winter type of vegetable, but, you know, when you're in 80-degree weather, it's it seems out of place.
Yeah, it doesn't feel the same. You know, it's funny with calamari. It's ubiquitous fried calamari. It's on every menu on Long Island, you know. And you know, I enjoy it once in a while, but I don't really get it. I mean, you know, it's fine. You know, I'll have it. You know, we have it on the menu out in the Mono because it's kind of expected, and I need a couple of those go-to things for people. But, you know, we throw in, you know, hot peppers in there. We throw in lemon slices in there, some vegetables, you know. So it's kind of a frito misto more than just a fried calamari, you know. But anyway, it's people that just, that, you know, there's certain things on Long Island. It's like Caesar salad with grilled chicken, you know. You almost have to have it because, you know, it's that item. Crazy.
Yeah. So just to recap the past couple of weeks, last week we aired a previous week's show because we had difficulties connecting, which
yeah,
turned
was,
out to be.
I was on my deathbed.
There you go. Hopefully you're feeling better today.
I am.
But some of our listeners had called in, written in the week before. They had written to fire@whli.com, and they didn't get the phone number of the. I guess the fish market that you had referenced or whatever. So the fact that we re-aired the previous week's show last week, they all were very happy because they got all the information they missed the week before.
Oh, good, yeah. Well, that's why you got to pay, you know, when you set yourself up to listen, you should bring a piece of paper and a pen just in case I say something that's not trivial. You may get a nugget there, you know.
There you go.
Just jot it down.
But we did get a lot of... people actually sending us emails, and I apologize because I'm not prepared this week, but next week we'll read some of those. And again, please, everybody just, send comments, questions, suggestions to fire@whli.com.
Yeah, and if you have something negative, you can send it someplace else. No, we do. I know, I'm speaking for myself. I appreciate hearing from people. It's always good to have that kind of... feedback and, you know, kind of improves the show a little bit. If you have some suggestions or something that you want to hear about, a recipe that you may not have been able to find or whatever, just give us a shout and we'll get to it as best we can.
There you go. So I want to make you laugh. I was just sitting in the sales pit here at the radio station, And I was overheard one of the girls, salespeople, talk. They said, you know, they have a client. They want to bring a really nice bottle of champagne for the holidays that just passed. And the person on the other end of the phone, I assume, was saying, oh, but we have that stuff in the promotions office. And the girl comes back and says, no, that was just sparkling wine. And then I'm laughing because I guess we had a little bit of a conversation about this a couple of weeks ago as we prepared for Christmas and New Year's. But again, champagne is a sparkling wine that comes from a region in France.
Yes.
I'm not quite sure what makes it that special as compared to other sparkling wines. And, you know, is it a... I guess it all comes down to the grape, but...
Well, it comes down to... No, they're all using the same grapes. It all comes down to the region and the terroir and where it's grown. I mean, that's... And how it's made. I mean, you know, champagne makers in France have had, you know, 300-year head start on us over here, you know. But there's great sparkling wine made everywhere. I mean, champagne is just sparkling wine. It happens to be made in that area. You know, it's like calling... You know, if they call sparkling wine Southold, you know, instead of champagne, you would have sparkling wine would be Southold. You know, so
there you go.
It's just a name, that's all. But, you know, there are great sparkling wines in France, and there are some that aren't so great. And there's the same thing here. You know, you have, I mean, tremendous. Although, I tell you what, you want to hear a funny New Year's Eve story?
Sure.
For the first time in 53 years, I got off before midnight, right?
Wow.
So I go home. The whole house is asleep, right? So I'm thinking, all right, I'll do this by myself. You know, Happy New Year, Tom. So I had this bottle, and I won't tell you whose it was because it doesn't really matter. It could happen to anybody, you know. But it was a fairly big bottle of champagne, you know. I should say sparkling wine. Or it could have been champagne. I won't tell. But anyway, so I got the... And I'm waiting, mystery. Yeah, I'm waiting until, like, 10:30 I'll open it up because that'll get me right to 12 o'clock, and then I'll just go to bed, you know, because that'll be work the next day early in the morning, right? So I'm waiting. I'm, you know, disciplined now. I'm waiting at 10:20, 10:25. Boy, I can't wait for this. It's going to be so good. I get the glasses ready. I take the thing out, right? I take the foil off. I untwist the wire. I take the cap off. I shimmy the cork out. Nothing happens. I'm like, what the hell's going on?
It was dead.
Yeah. I'm like, it's the first time in my life we had a flat tire in champagne. I said, I must have opened thousands of bottles of champagne. This is the only one that's ever been flat. So I'm sitting there on the couch looking up at the ceiling going, are you paying attention? Is this the way you want to start 2022? Come on, man. Give me a break, you know. So I'm sitting there drinking flat champagne at midnight, you know. Here we go, 2022. Oh, it's going to be a doozy, I'm sure, you know. Oh, God, please.
Well, we hosted a little bit of a party down in Florida, and it was like a potluck dinner type thing.
Careful there.
Yeah, they
can't be nervous for a minute.
No, we do edibles. At any rate, there was an assortment of champagnes and sparkling wines or whatever, mostly lower-end stuff. And I don't know if I'm a snob, but, you know, I had no expectations opening some of these bottles. Again, is there a correlation between the price level and what you're to expect in the bottle? I mean, there was even a sparkling wine from Santa Margarita, which I know is a brand that you're not the biggest fan of.
No.
But it's funny that I guess they're expanding their product line. And people associate that as the grand, you know, Pinot Grigio, and therefore it must be the best champagne or sparkling wine. And, it was okay. But
Pinot Grigio is a grape that's got a noble history and can be very well made. The biggest problem with most Pinot Grigios is they're mass-produced for cash flow, you know. And Santa Margarita, there's not even a vineyard. You know, they're just a buyer. They're a negotiant, and they buy grapes from all over. They make this Pinot Grigio, and they charge three times what it's worth. And everybody thinks it's fabulous, you know. And it's not an Italian restaurant on Long Island. It doesn't have that prominently on the menu, you know, over by the glass.
Right, but I get a kick because then there's also Santa Maria. And everybody think, you know, I once had my sister over, and she's a Pinot Grigio drinker. And she goes, oh, I got a great deal on this, you know. And I go, yeah. Because you bought Santa Maria, not Santa Margarita.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, I went through the same thing with the fish thing. All of a sudden, it was a cowfish. There was a, you know, whatever, a rumblefish. You know, it's like, you guys, come on, guys. This is my thing, you know. And nobody seems to have any problem kind of ripping it off.
Wait. So the other humor in our holiday evening was that we said if you needed something to bring, shrimp would be a good idea. So my friend went out to Publix and got some freshly cooked shrimp, and they were excellent. They were, you know, like the colossal size. It was really well. It was good and nice cocktail sauce. And then somebody came in with the infamous shrimp platter.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those.
And it was a block of ice.
Plus, they're no bigger than plankton.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, you got to strain them through your teeth like a whale to get like one chew on a shrimp stick.
So the smart aleck IB, once they opened it, I said it's kind of tough to eat because it's frozen. And then nobody knew what to do. I got laughed at because I said we should probably actually just reboil it and refrigerate it real quick. But we ended up leaving it out overnight, and by morning it was ready to have omelets and shrimp cocktail.
You could always have a shrimp-sickle, you know?
it was actually pretty humorous, but the person said, oh, but I got it in the refrigerator section.
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully that's why this show exists. I mean, we're trying to do our best to, put a little educational material out there for people who aren't.
Hey, listen, so this party that we hosted was quite a food disappointment. So then I heard somebody was bringing a charcuterie platter.
Charcuterie
platter, which ended up being some.
I think charcuterie was a dancer in the '50s.
Well, that's probably the problem. That's what they probably brought instead of what I wanted. but it was a couple of different cheeses, which was okay, and then it was like pepperoni.
Oh, boy, yeah.
Not what I really thought. But the pièce de résistance, and I should be speaking Spanish when I tell this story, was they had tacos. So we had soft and hard taco shells from Moe's.
Nice.
It doesn't get much better.
No, I know. For me, if I need a taco, that's where I'm going.
And then I have to admit there was a full catering tray of over-dry Big Ziti. So, you know, it was...
You need to change your friends. I mean, you know, you got the wrong friends, I think.
Oh, my God. It's not about, I mean, in this situation, it wasn't about the food. It was about the company. But, my God, it would have been fun to have the company and the food.
Yeah, well, you got it. Like, I one time, I remember years ago, I had a girlfriend. She decided she was going to throw a dinner party, right? So she was inviting me and, you know, six of my friends, who are all chefs, right? So I said, I know what's going to happen. I don't want to cook. You know, I'm going to handle the whole thing. Okay, fine. You handle the whole thing. 2 days before, I can't do this. I'm nervous. I knew it. I knew it. Damn it. I knew it. So when she invited, you know, six of the top chefs on Long Island over for dinner, of course you're going to be nervous, you know, if you have a brain. You know what I mean? So anyway, I wound up cooking dinner, but I called them all up. I said, listen, everybody bring a course. I'm not doing this by myself. So we had this great dinner. We had, you know, it was like... We had the right people there bringing the right food. It was fabulous.
Well, the saga continues, actually, as we're talking. More thoughts come back to me. So we went down New Year's Eve day, so on the 31st, and we had this New Year's Eve party. So that was Friday. Monday, Kerry's son came down with a bunch of his friends, and we went out to get food. And we're going to have a barbecue with some of our adult friends and some of the college kids. And we had anything from hamburgers and hot dogs to sausage. And everything was going along really well. But we had gone to BJ's and Publix to get all the food or whatever. So we're ready to eat. And I go to have a sausage and pepper hero. And I couldn't find the hero rolls. I don't know who the genius was. And these are college kids. They took the fresh... hero bread and put it in the freezer.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So, you know, immediately I had to, you know, put, it wasn't frozen, but it just, it was chilled.
Yeah, I'd stay out of Florida.
Right, so I had to throw it in the microwave, you know, like 6 seconds to, you know, just warm
just
it up.
Just to further screw it up. When you put bread in the microwave, it gets hot real quick, it's real nice, and then 10 minutes later it turns into stone.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, so, again, it just, the only good thing about that night was, you know, when everybody got up the next morning and at 11 o'clock were hungry, there was, you know, a hose supply of cooked hamburgers and hot dogs that were devoured.
Bunch of shrimp.
And some freshly thawed shrimp.
Freshly thawed shrimp. I love those, you know.
So then my other thought goes back to right before I went down to Florida, I guess everybody was getting prepared for Christmas and New Year's or whatever, and I guess a lot of the specialty stores were selling the tenderloin of beef that people, I guess, cut up for filet mignon, right?
Yes.
And then there was a lot of shellfish, I guess, people were buying for the Feast of the Seven Fishes. Now, that reminds me that one of our listeners wrote in and said, let me think. Fish is singular and plural, yet it's the night of the seven fishes.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
I don't know. I'm not an English teacher. I'm a cook.
Okay.
So I think that, I think it can be used either way.
Okay.
I'm trying to think if I've heard fishes. I don't know.
So at any rate, that was an email that we got at fire@whli.com. And I apologize for not having our listener's name in front of me, but we will make mention next week. But what I was getting to is I went to get some lobster tails, and they were selling them. It was like four-ounce ones. I think it was like $28 or something. But to be honest, a four-ounce lobster tail looks like a shrimp.
Yeah, it's a big shrimp is what it
is. So then they had some, I guess, seven-ounce lobster tails. And those were looking okay. And then I saw a 16-ounce lobster tail. Actually, and what I ended up getting, it was a 20-ounce. But that was incredible. Now, I have it in my freezer because it had been frozen. It was frozen when I got it.
Surprise, it fits.
I need to figure out how to prepare that because they were talking about grilling it to defrost it and then boiling it. And I paid a pretty penny for it, to be honest. I don't want to destroy it, and I'm going to need some help with how to...
Yeah, you never grill anything to defrost it. That's those are two mutually exclusive terms.
When we're sitting in front of each other, I'm going to show you the poster that was in front of the display that I swear says that.
Yeah, well, that's a bad idea. you know, basically, you just want, you know, a lobster tail that big, you probably want to, like, steam that or boil it before you grill it. Because you're just going to wind up burning the outside. The inside is going to be raw. It's going to be a mess. You know, it's too big.
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to do is you want to steam that so it's just about cooked, or boil it until it's just about cooked. And then finish it on the grill so you get that grill flavor, but without destroying the flesh itself.
Now, when you do that, are you putting the meat down to the grill or with the shell and the belly up?
You're going to do both sides because you're going to have to get the heat through to the middle. So, you know, I would start it on the meat side, you know, brush it with some olive oil or something like that, or butter, and put it down on the meat side and let get some grill marks on it and turn it over and then finish it that way.
And then what is it? You cut it down the back, back along the spine, and then pull it through, and that's the beautiful presentation?
But you're not going to do that on a grill, though. If you're going to grill it, you're going to cut it completely in half, long ways, so you have two pieces that you can grill. If you want to do that the other way, what you're going to do is you're going to cut that down the back, and you're going to pull that meat out, lay it over the top, and then you're going to have to bake it in the oven.
Oh.
You won't be able to grill it like that.
How would you season something like that, if at all?
That's salt, pepper, really. And butter.
And no oil on it or anything if you're putting it on the grill?
If you're going to put it on the grill, I brush it with either clarified butter or oil, you know, just to keep it from sticking.
Oh, which brings me to my next question. I'm walking through the aisles of the food store, and I see coconut oil, which actually looked like a paste. It was like in a jar, and it
that's because it solidifies when it's cold.
So what do you use coconut oil for as far as cooking?
Yeah, it's used a lot in Asian cooking, Thai cooking, and Indian, you know, there's a lot of coconut oil. It's healthier for you than regular oil, from what I understand. I mean, I've never really investigated the You know, I'm not, the health end of it to me isn't why I'm in this. And maybe as I get older, I'll pay more attention, but I'm more interested in flavor and presentation and that kind of thing, you know. I leave the healthy cooking to people who do that really well. That's not my area of expertise. And I don't personally care about it all that much for me. So the bottom line is I just do restaurant food and try and make it taste as good as I can. Now, I mean, that being said, I mean, I'm not going to overly, poison people with fats and stuff like that. But at the same time, I'm not going to investigate the ingredients and the caloric content and all the other stuff. I just have no interest in it.
So I think we need to take a break and thank our good friends at FreshFinGourmet.com for being a continued sponsor of Playing with Fire here on WHLI.
Yeah, great company, man. You just, email them or find them on the web, and, you can get... I tell you, their octopus, I can tell you that, is fabulous firsthand.
Very cool. So let's let them tell their story, and when we come back, I think I'm going to turn the show over to you, being that it's your show, and much to the pleasure of our listeners, I'll let you take over the control of the show.
All right. We'll see you in a couple.
Attention seafood lovers. Introducing FreshFinGourmet.com. Now you can enjoy specialty seafood delivered directly to your door. Their seafood products are sourced from mineral-rich waters across the globe and are responsibly harvested. Family-owned and operated by the Gulo family, who began their legacy in the food business from their personal love for seafood. The holidays are coming. Order all the delicacies for the Night of Seven Fishes. You can order sushi-grade octopus, squid, Chilean sea bass, wild Dover sole filet, and much more. They also offer premium meat, imported Sicilian desserts, and delicious pasta. Get the fastest delivery and shipping in the business. And their attention to detail in both packing and shipping assures freshness and quality. Go to FreshFinGourmet.com and see the vast array of choices for your special meal creation. That's Fresh, F-I-N, Gourmet.com.
You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI AM and 104.7 FM with your host, Tom Shordell. Playing with Fire is local Long Island-centric radio show heard every week at this time.
All right. That's quite the introduction. So anyway, I've been going out a little bit here and there. And, the other night I went to Marco Pellegrino's place, Osteria Umbra. You know, I'm kind of a regular there. I probably go there once a month or so, And for those of you who've heard me talk about it, you can go grab a cup of coffee. And for those of you who haven't, you should listen because it's really a great restaurant. And I'm not going to kid you, it's not inexpensive. But you'll get a real experience, almost like the Italian countryside. The decor belies what's going on. The decor is a little modern and a little bit, let's say, marbly, and a little bright for my taste. But I got to tell you, he's got this open kitchen with a big rotisserie in there, which you almost never see in America. And, he does different birds on there, and rabbit and suckling pig. And inside, he's from Umbria, and he's a master pasta maker. And his wife is the pastry chef. She makes all the gelatos and the desserts and stuff. It's really a great little restaurant. And, I was glad to see him. I went there. It was the night before New Year's Eve, I guess. And I was glad to see he was very busy. And, business has been good over there. But you got to check it out. So we had, I had a duck carpaccio appetizer where he took the duck breasts and it was cooked. But cooked very rare, pounded thin, served it with a salad on it. And he sent out an appetizer of, polenta with taleggio sauce, like a cheese sauce on it, and speck, which is a type of ham. It was just fabulous. I mean, just really earthy. Stick to your ribs, great stuff. And then we had one more appetizer. I don't remember what it was. It was the calamari. He grills calamari on skewers with like a breadcrumb mixture. It's like fresh breadcrumbs. I'm still trying to figure out how he does it. I don't want to ask him because I certainly don't want to steal from him. But it's really kind of a cool thing because the crumbs get grilled or roasted. They're not fried. It's not fried. It's done probably in a salamander above the range, but it's really a very very cool way to do calamari, And then we split a veal chop, because I really can't eat two entrees anymore. So split a veal chop, and that was great. Came with mashed potatoes and some broccoli rabe. And then he sent out some braised pearl onions that were braised with a little bit of balsamic vinegar and red wine. And it went perfectly with the you know, with the veal chop. And then we had a side of Brussels sprouts with pancetta, which was always good. I always love ham in my Brussels sprouts. So it was just a great meal overall. And he always sends out dessert, which I try and avoid like the plague. I was trying to get out of there before he saw us. And he came over and said hello, and I went, oh, here it comes. You know, and sure enough, he sent out dessert, this really good pistachio gelato that his wife makes. And then he had these two little, like, chocolatey, hazelnutty crunch things that were just, you know, maybe the size of a square inch, something like that. But they were just great, you know. And it was all in all, you know, I had a couple of good glasses of wine. You know, he has all those great wines by the glass there. And he has what they call, what the hell's the name of it now? Oh, it's going to come to me. It's a little wine preservation gun that you can buy. And it has a little, like a cartridge, a CO2 cartridge on it. And you can basically, you know, draw wine out of the bottle with this needle, and it replaces that with the CO2, and you know, kind of seals the wine. Coravin, Coravin, Coravin is called. And they're great to have at home if you don't have one. If you're really into wine by the glass, it's a great way to go because you don't have to open the bottle. You know, it goes in almost like a corkscrew. It's a straight little needle that goes in, and it draws the wine out, and it replaces it with argon or whatever that is in the cylinder. And so he's able to serve all these different wines by the glass, keep them fresh. And he's got all kinds of Barbarescos and Barolos and higher-end whites and reds. So it's a fun place to go. If you're really looking for an Italian food experience, that's not the norm. It's not, you know, it's not like American Italian. This is Italian food like it's done in Italy. Osteria Umbra is the place to go. He does a fabulous job there.
I believe it was recognized by Newsday as one of the top 100 restaurants of the year.
Oh, I'm sure it was. He's, you know, to me, it's one of the top two or three Italian restaurants on the island, I think, you know. He does such an interesting take on Italian food, which is really what Italian food is. It's not like a lot of the Italian restaurants that you have here. Not that they're bad. They're not. But, you know, it's more representative of Americanized Italian food. You know, places I go to like Osteria Umbra and Luigi Q's in Plainview, he cooks like, and Luigi's the same way. He cooks like he's cooking in Italy, not like he's cooking here. So you really get a kind of a different dynamic, you know, with the foods. And you know, they're handled by people who've been there and done that. You know, they've cooked in Italy their whole lives. So, you know, it's in their DNA, and they bring it over here. And I think it's just fabulous, you know. You get it more in the city than you do out here. The restaurants out here tend to, you know, it's suburbia. We all seem to clone, and I've been guilty of it. You know, you have certain things on the menu you think you have to have, like we were talking before about the calamari and the Caesar salad with grilled chicken, and you know, you see them in every menu everywhere, you know. And if you don't have it, people ask you for it. It's crazy, you know. But these guys are they're different. They just they're not slaves to that, and they do their own thing, and it's really good. I have to get you to go there one day. It's just a fabulous experience.
Sounds like a plan.
Now, on the other side of that, the American-Italian thing, there's a little place, you know, every once in a while, I'm always looking, and I've said this before, I'm always looking for that one little joint, you know, that joint that has good food that I don't have to spend $350 on a Tuesday, you know, for dinner, which I'm totally known to do, you know, but every once in a while, it's like, you know, you just want to go out and get something quick that's good, and I find that most places that I go to are okay, you know, but it's not really, really great stuff, you know. It's acceptable, or it's, you know, mediocre or whatever, you know. There's a little place in East Norwich, just north of Northern Boulevard, on the east side of the road, in the shopping center there, where there's Christina's Gourmet Market. I don't know if you know the area. Angelina's restaurant there, you know. There's a little place on the end called Leone. I guess Leone means lion in Italian. And it's a pizza place like every other pizza place you've ever been in. You know, it's got that pizza side, and then it's got the dining room side. And usually those places are mostly thought of as pizza. Like, I don't know, and I could be wrong, but I've never gone to Mario's and had anything but pizza. you know, and I'm sure their food is fine. It's just I just never went there, you know, for that. But this is different, you know. Whoever's in the kitchen really knows what he's doing, because I've had some really good meals there. And I got to tell you, most of the stuff is the usual suspects, the things you find in almost every Italian restaurant on Long Island. You get the veal sorrentino, the chicken francese, the piccata, the whole thing, you know, meatballs, yada, 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 the same menu. But everything is done really, really well, and shockingly so. And the pizza's great, you know. But if you get a chance, check that out. If you're in the neighborhood of East Norwich, Oyster Bay area, you know, or Jericho, whatever, take a ride up there. It's worth your time. It's just fabulous. I was there the other night with Dorio. I took Dorio up there. And, you know, he's kind of a little, you know, pissy about his Italian restaurants, because he's raised with, you know, his mom was from Palermo, you know what I mean? So he knows what the food's like. And he was like, wow, this is really good. I'm like, I know. I'm trying to tell you, it's fabulous, you know. And, you know, the prices are moderate. I think the most expensive thing on the menu is $30, you know. And it's funny, every once in a while you run into one of those. There was a place in Sag Harbor called Concadoro. It's not there anymore. And I used to go there with my girlfriend at the time, and we would get, like, a salad, which was the size of a small, you know, Balkan country. You had to see this thing. It was like, the, you know, 2 feet off the table and 3 feet wide. And then they would give you, like, a pasta, like linguine with clam sauce, was the same size. You couldn't possibly eat it, you know. And we would split the whole thing. We'd get out of there for, like, I don't know, $28 for the two of us. It was, like, hilarious. I'm going back, obviously, to, you know, the early 90s, whatever it was. But just fabulous. And this is kind of like that, you know. The portions are too big for me, but they're good for everybody else. And the food is really, really good. And it's not just good because it's inexpensive. It's just really good. And, you know, you get the bill and you're like, what happened here? You forget something, you know? The other thing is there's no liquor license there, and they'll let you bring your wine. No corkage fee. I don't think, you know, I think if you walk in with a bottle of tequila, they might have something to say about that. But if you want to, you know, bring in your own wine, you're welcome to do that. They'll give you the glasses. They'll open it for you. They'll put it in the ice if you want it. Just really nice people, and couldn't be more accommodating. And I can't say enough about the place. It's phenomenal.
Wow.
Yeah, you should check that out, too. You know, order a bunch of pizzas for the radio station someday.
There you go.
I don't know if they deliver that far, but, you know. Yeah, it's just, you know, I've been going out here, and I haven't been going to the city, which I kind of miss, because there's a level of cooking in the city that you don't find out here all that much. I don't think the market is here for that so much as it is in the city, and I kind of miss it. But, you know, I hear all these horror stories about what's going on in there, and I'm hesitant to go in. You know, who wants to go in and, you know, fight all of that stuff, you know?
I think you're right in that you need to be selective, but we shouldn't abandon the city because there is some interesting dining opportunities.
Oh, I listen, it's my favorite place in the world to eat. I mean, I've been all over the world eating in all of these cities. And, you know, it always gets down to New York. I think New York is probably the greatest restaurant city in the world, you know, at this point. And, you know, I'm sure there are people that argue for San Francisco and, you know, New Orleans and Florence and whatever. But, you know, you have it all here. I mean, and it's all available 24 hours a day. You know, it's just crazy. There's nothing like Manhattan. I mean, you know, at nightlife, it's just, it's nuts. And you have a level of talent in there that's probably unmatched anywhere, you know, as far as numbers go, you know. And even, you know, what's great, what's been really great about the last 20 years is that even the kind of the lower end places, and I don't mean that disparagingly, I'm just talking about money wise, have really improved the quality tremendously in a lot of places. You know, you have a lot of these cool little street food, you know, places that have, you know, tacos and izakayas, the little Japanese skewer bars and, you know, the taco shops and stuff. Some of them are killer, you know, absolutely killer. And those foods, you know, haven't really been around us all that long. I mean, you know, we're only eating tacos for like 15 years, you know. And the sad part is Taco Bell isn't really a great representative of that. You know, if you have, so like I have a Honduran woman that's worked for me forever, Carmen, and she's like, she's a taco queen. So she makes all we make tacos from scratch here, you know. I don't buy the shells. We make them. And she makes the blue corn and the regular corn tortillas, and they're just, it's night and day. You know, it's like eating a completely different item than what, you know, the average person is used to if you go to, you know, your local mom-and-pop Mexican joint, you know. It's just not the same. And, you know, between the different salsas and the different cremas and the toppings and the meats and stuff, it's just, it's Disneyland for, you know, foodies. I mean, the taco thing is, it's just unending, you know, the amount of, you know, items you can use in there. It's just such a great vehicle for everything. We do a blackened shrimp taco that I must sell 50 of them a day. It's crazy. But, you know, it's kind of like a, you know, it's sort of like a culinary, you know, confusion thing. You know, you have the blackened fish from New Orleans and, you know, the tacos from Mexico City.
Well, that's the basic model at Dirty Taco and Tequila. They have all sorts of different taco options, anything from Brussels sprout to, just like you said, the it's just a tremendous variety. It's definitely a fusion, but it seems to work. I mean, they have Asian-type things, and they have the traditional, but it really takes it to new levels, and they're small. It's almost like tapas, but taco, you know, that and a flight of tequila is a really nice evening.
Yeah, well, you know, the taco is really kind of a sandwich is all it is. It's just, you know, it's folded differently and not cut, you know. It's basically a bread thing, and, you know, it's a vehicle for, you know, what you're putting on it. And, you know, you can make that vehicle, you know, you can buy it, you know, like most of these restaurants just buy them and, you know, fill them and whatever, fry them, whatever they do with them. But if you make them from scratch, it's a completely different experience. It's just night and day, the difference between, you know, a freshly made tortilla shell and one that you buy in a store. So my advice is, if you've ever done it, buy yourself a little taco press. You're going to need a taco press or a rolling pin, whatever. I guess you can do with a rolling pin. But a taco press is fun. They're like $20 or whatever, $30. And you just, you know, roll a little golf ball-sized piece of the dough. You know, you can buy the masa, the cornmeal mix. You know, just follow the instructions on it. It's just cornmeal mix and water, a little bit of salt. And then, you know, make a golf ball-sized, press it down, and then toast it off, and you're good to go.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of stories, just like you're saying, you know, not to go to a chain-type restaurant, assuming that's what it's all about, but you find these boutique restaurants, and when you get a homemade, you know, soft taco, it can be incredible because there's between the filling and the actual taco shell or wrap, it's incredible.
Well, I think the problem is that the thing is that with chain restaurants, they do kind of like a representative model of what they think the people want from that cuisine. And it's soulless, you know, a lot of times. I mean, soul food isn't just for African Americans. I mean, it's, you know, soul food just means the stuff you ate growing up that your grandma made, you know. And if your grandma was in Mexico, that's not African American soul food, that's Mexican soul food. I know that, you know, Jean, you know, growing up Korean, you know, she has certain things that, you know, make her weepy. I mean, you know, a bowl of stew or something with gochujang or, you know, a bibimbap or things like that that she'll crave because that was the food she had growing up, you know. And for her, that's soul food. You know? So I think that when you get these little mom-and-pop places that, you know, have been there and done that and made those things and tasted grandma's cooking and, you know, recipes that were passed down, there's a soul to that kind of restaurant that you don't have in the big, Pepe's, you know, whatever, Mexican trattoria.
No, you're definitely right. My memory goes back to the summer when we were going to visit Kerry's daughter at sleepaway camp, and we were driving through New York and Pennsylvania, and we came to like a winery, and they had a food truck, and it was just like some really incredible home cooked food, and as compared to, again, to stopping a Burger King or whatever.
Yeah, you know, it's really weird. You know, we live in a strange time where, you know, I know some people have been, taken to task for co-opting somebody else's cuisine, like, you know, an American guy shouldn't be cooking Chinese food. But, well, why not? What if he's good at it, you know? I mean, what's the big deal? I don't get it, you know? I wouldn't be offended if, you know, Yama, my Japanese sushi chef friend, you know, decided to make, you know, porterhouse steak. So what? Who cares? You know what I mean? Open up a steakhouse.
So that brings up an interesting thing, an observation. So I guess locally there's a number of Asian restaurants, Chinese restaurants, called Danny's Kitchen, I believe it's the name. And yeah. It's actually a bunch of Americans that decided to prepare and offer Chinese cuisine. But in Oceanside, they opened one, and I went there, and it seemed to be all Asians working there. So now I figured, and I don't know, and it would be interesting if anybody had any insight, but it seems to me that it became a brand, almost like a franchise, so that they must be acquiring or recruiting Asian restaurants to go under their name and expand that way. So although it might have started as these two brothers or whatever, or two friends that, decided to get into Asian cooking, now they're all of a sudden creating this franchise opportunity. So I guess they all have the same menu, but it must be like, you know, privately owned, just like a franchise.
Yeah, I don't understand all the angst about this stuff because, you know, this cancel culture gone crazy is what it is to me. I mean, I had an Asian restaurant in the late 90s, you know, and early aughts in Roslyn called Lemongrass, and right on the sign it said Asian-inspired American cuisine. Why am I not allowed to be inspired by Asian food? I mean, you know, what's the big deal? I mean, and meanwhile you have a place called Coat in the city, which is basically a Korean steakhouse. Now, should we all be mad at him? You know, but nobody ever gets mad at him. It's just us, you know, they get mad at the Americans. It's unbelievable. You know?
I guess there though somewhere becomes a line, though, because even you criticize, you know, when we talk about these different fusion restaurants and you call it confusion. But at what point do they take it too far? I mean, is it when you have a pastrami egg roll? Is that crazy, or is that creative cooking?
Well, I think, you know, beauty's in the mouth of the beholder, you know? I mean, the bottom line is, I don't criticize them for taking a stab at another nation's cuisine. I criticize them for putting out ridiculous food. You know, it's the pastrami egg roll, to me, is silly, you know what I mean? But to somebody else, you know, maybe... You know, maybe there's one old Jewish man on the planet who thinks that's a good idea. You know what I mean?
And that be said, we dined at a restaurant together where there was an Italian egg roll. So go figure. But I think we need to take a break. And again, thank our friends at FreshFinGourmet.com and maybe chat about them for a minute when we come back.
Attention seafood lovers. Introducing FreshFinGourmet.com. Now you can enjoy specialty seafood delivered directly to your door. Their seafood products are sourced from mineral-rich waters across the globe and are responsibly harvested. Family-owned and operated by the Gulo family, who began their legacy in the food business from their personal love for seafood. The holidays are coming. Order all the delicacies for the Night of Seven Fishes. You can order sushi-grade octopus, squid, Chilean sea bass, wild Dover sole filet, and much more. They also offer premium meat, imported Sicilian desserts, and delicious pasta. Get the fastest delivery and shipping in the business. And their attention to detail in both packing and shipping assures freshness and quality. Go to FreshFinGourmet.com and see the vast array of choices for your special meal creation. That's Fresh, F-I-N, Gourmet.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI and 104.7 WHLI FM with your host, Tom Shadell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
Yeah, it's all the. I think, you know, from where I sit, I think it's all in play. I think if you're really good at something, there's a guy in Boston who has a restaurant called Oh Yeah, and he's doing sushi, and he does sushi, I think, better than most of the Japanese guys I know. Now, that's heretical for some people, but you know, his name is Tim Cushman. He's an American kid who happened to study it and, you know, got a PhD. So why not let them do it? What's the problem? I just don't understand all the angst over this. Good food's good food, regardless of who makes it, you know. Anyway.
So I want to offer up an idea for a new segment on the show each week. Maybe, Tom, you can highlight a new restaurant to our audience, or maybe a wine that you came across in the past couple of days or weeks or whatever.
Do I get an expense account for this?
I think thanks to Donald Trump, that all disappeared.
It did. It wasn't him. That all disappeared a long time ago.
Because I know that I'm not the smartest guy, but I said, hey, you know, we got this gig, we got this radio show, we talk about Long Island food, wine, and lifestyle, and if we explore it, it's sort of like a business expense. It would be like,
research and development, you know.
Yeah, it would be like Neil Diamond, you know, a business expense would be his attire on stage, so why not? And when I went to my accountant, he just laughed. He said,
No,
don't work that way, no more.
No, the government's finding money. You know, the problem is they can't stop spending. They're like crack addicts, you know, and so they have to keep searching for money everywhere. It's like hilarious. Just, you know, knock it off and you won't need it, you know, but they can't knock it off. I saw a clock on it that, you know, it's almost comical. You know, it's a number. It's not even relevant anymore. You can't pay it. You know, it's trillions and trillions of dollars. It's like, why are you even keeping a record of it, you know? So, that's why I never understood, you know, you get these people talk about the minimum wage has to go to $15 an hour because you can't raise a family on 10. Well, you're not supposed to be raising a family on 10. You're supposed to be learning how to play well with others, come in on time, you know, show up, you know, learn some skills or whatever. And then, again, if $1,500 takes you out of poverty, if $15 an hour takes you out of poverty, why not give them 75 and make them wealthy? Why stop there? I don't get it. Maybe I should run for office, huh?
Well, I just gotta. We are very happy to have FreshFinGourmet.com as our sponsor of our show. And I was actually just perusing the website, and I saw some interesting recipes that I just throw at you. Anything from smoked salmon on toast to charred octopus, sous vide octopus with squidding hummus and pomegranate salad.
I love that.
Wokked baby octopus and sepia with ginger, garlic, scallion, and cilantro.
Nice.
And another one, grilled octopus salad. And then here's one, pulpo a la galega. Pulpo is what?
Octopus.
Oh, okay. So a lot of octopus. But Freshfin Gourmet is a website where you can go for Italian delicacies, anywhere from seafood to pasta and Sicilian desserts, I'm told.
Nice. Yeah, I'm. You know, I gotta try some of the desserts. I'm curious about them because, you know, in Italy, that you don't find a lot of desserts. I mean, they're not a big dessert culture, the Italians. You know, they got a couple of torts and nut things and gelatos and stuff like that, but they're not huge. I mean, if you look for an Italian dessert cookbook, you know, it's not going to be very thick.
Well, I guess they're going to have to send some stuff over for next week so we can talk about it.
That'd be great, yeah. Have them send some samples over. I'll check them out. We'll taste them on the show. It'll be fun.
But as the end of the show nears, why don't you critique or suggest a wine that you've become familiar with lately?
Well, I just got a bunch of wines for Christmas. Somebody who knows me really well bought me a couple of Albert Boxler's wines. Albert Boxler is my favorite producer in the region of Alsace, which is in eastern France, southeastern France. It's on the German border, the German-Swiss border there. And so there's a real Germanic influence in Alsace with the food and the wine, and they make a lot of Riesling there. Riesling and Silvaner, which are grapes that are grown in Germany also. And The Germanic influence is in the architecture and it's in the food. You get a lot of charcuterie comes from there. A lot of pork products come from there. You know, they use a lot of sauerkraut. So it's almost like a little German enclave there. And it's actually where my last name comes from. But anyway, I find the wines there, some of the more interesting wines in France. You know, aside from Burgundy, which is where my heart lies, Alsace would be a close second. It'd be 1 and 1A. And I just love the white wines and some of the reds that come from there. They grow some Pinot Noir there, and they do a pretty good job with that. But their Rieslings and their Gewurztraminers and their Silvaners, are fabulous. And if you can, Silvana is not easy to find. It's probably my favorite of the three when it's done really well. Riesling is you know, probably the most versatile grape because it comes anywhere from bone dry to, you know, toothachingly sweet. And, you know, so you can buy in many of those iterations and you'll find fabulous wines everywhere.
It's very it's a misnomer about, because most people assume it's a very sweet dessert wine. And I just, over my vacation, I was trying to explain to somebody that it's not. It can be a very dry wine very tasty.
And it's very good food wine also. The problem with the perception is, like you say, everybody thinks Riesling is sweet. And, you know, there are dessert Rieslings for sure. And some Rieslings, like, especially in Germany, they could be, you know, like a sweeter style Riesling, which is fine. But then, you know, you get others like the ones I've made on the East End are bone dry. I have no residual sugar in them whatsoever. So they're like as dry as any Sauvignon Blanc you've ever had, you know. And I think a lot of people, you know, they kind of confuse the word dry with sugar and lack thereof. And a lot of times, you know, a wine will be fruity, but it's not sweet, you know. And that's a difference that it takes a little time and a little bit of, you know, tasting to kind of discern the difference between something that's sweet, like an after-dinner wine, a dessert wine, and something that's just fruit-driven. And it's not sugar, it's the fruit in there, you know. And some people say, oh, I like a drier wine, which basically means, you know, they want either an alcohol finish or something that's a little less fruity, which is, you know, fine. It's your preference. I mean, I had Dorio over last night, and we drank a couple of Burgundies, a white and a red, and we had a Pellini Monrachet, a Premier Cru, which was just stunningly good. He said, I've never had anything like this in my life. And I'm like, I know, it's why I drink a lot of Burgundy. There's no other wine in the world like it. And then we opened up a red, and he's like, you're killing me, dude, you know? I'm like, yeah, I know. That's, once you get, you know, once you, it's like, how do you get them back on the farm once they've seen Paris, you know? It's the kind of thing. It's the same thing. You know, how do you go drinking a Santa Margarita after you had one of these, you know? It's impossible. But,
and that being said, I think we've reached the end of our show.
We have. We've gotten right to the end. But in conclusion, I'll just say that, you know, check out a Riesling, any kind of Riesling from Alsace, and I think you'll be turned around, you know. And just go to your guy and say, you know, listen, I'm looking for a Riesling from Alsace, drier style, you know. And it'll turn you onto something, and it's revelatory. And if you can get a Silvana, get that one too. But that's my recommendation for this week is Alsatian wines and Rieslings and Silvanas. So with that, we're going to end the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life. As usual, Tom's Three Keys to Life are, it's too short to drink bad wine, treat every meal like it was your last, and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza. And Stewie, I will see you next week, if not before.
Feel better, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shawdell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.
Sweet Fancy Long Island is the award-winning dessert and pastry company that has become one of the hottest sources for bakery treats available for delivery on Long Island. Each mouthwatering creation has a personality all its own, teasing the palate with its rich flavors, complex textures, and eye-catching presentations. All items at Sweet Fancy Long Island are made 100% from scratch using the highest quality ingredients: Belgian chocolate, European butter, vanilla beans from Tahiti, and the richest, most flavorful fruits available. Their clients can enjoy any one of our delectable confections from one-of-a-kind pastries, specialty and occasion cakes, French macarons, and karma cups. Their signature line includes an assortment assortment of charming, personalized size desserts served in miniature mason jars. The Sweet Fancy Long Island team takes great pride in presenting a unique, delicious, and elegant dessert experience and works closely with every client to create a memorable dessert that will add an exciting dimension to any celebration. Presently, the work of Sweet Fancy Long Island have been found in some of the area's top restaurants, country clubs, gourmet shops, catering facilities, and Food Network. Go to sweetfancyli.com to order online or to view their incredible gallery of desserts.
Attention seafood lovers! Introducing FreshFinGourmet.com. Now you can enjoy specialty seafood delivered directly to your door. Their seafood products are sourced from mineral-rich waters across the globe and are responsibly harvested. Family-owned and operated by the Gulo family, who began their legacy in the food business from their personal love for seafood. The holidays are coming. Order all the delicacies for the Night of Seven Fishes. You can order sushi-grade octopus, squid, Chilean sea bass, wild Dover sole filet, and much more. They also offer premium meat, imported Sicilian desserts, and delicious pasta. Get the fastest delivery and shipping in the business. And their attention to detail in both packing and shipping assures freshness and quality. Go to FreshFinGourmet.com and see the vast array of choices for your special meal creation. That's Fresh, F-I-N, Gourmet.com.